This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
In conversation with the Democratic Alliance's federal chairperson, Helen Zille, about, well, we just talk about the current political landscape. I don't have to say more than that because Helen Zille will speak about everything and anything, and she does not shy away from the questions of the day. So let me just bring Helen Zille into the conversation. Helen Zille, welcome, ma'am. How are you?
Yes, hi, Denzel. Thank you very much for inviting me, and hello to all your listeners. I'm well, and I hope you are too.
Helen, and I was trying to work out when last I actually saw you, when last we actually spoke, and I just couldn't get find a time. I think maybe local government elections somewhere there, but I just couldn't pinpoint it. It's been a long time, Helen.
It's been a while, you know. We get on with our lives, we get on with our jobs, and then our paths cross again sometime, and that's pleasant.
Well, I'm glad our paths are crossing tonight, Helen. Helen, let me start off with this, Helen. Do you sometimes, when you do see the barrage of insults and the barrage of criticism that come your way, either professionally and or in your personal space, because also in your personal space, you really, really get a lot of that. And I think sometimes it's got to, if I was subjected to some of that for such a long period of time also, I'm not sure how I would shape up. How do you shape up? What is it that you do? I mean, what kind of armory are you wearing?
Well, then I just ignore it, you know. I know who I am. I know what I'm trying to help achieve for South Africa. I've been doing that for all my adult life, trying to achieve a non-racial inclusive democracy with growing prosperity for everybody. And I know that I am going to take a lot of criticism because I've actually been quite successful in that quest. I mean, in my time in politics, we've grown from having one public representative who was Helen Suzman, now to being the official opposition countrywide, to running 38 local governments and a whole province. That's enormous progress. And I was the leader of a party for a long time. I was a mayor. I was the premier. I was given the very humbling title of World Mayor of the Year in 2008. So obviously, I'm going to attract criticism. I mean, every successful politician the world over has been highly criticized. And those who've been the most successful have always been the most criticized.
Well, there's a stint as leader of the party. Do you feel that? And you know, my stats will let me down, but on average, I think you took the party from around 15-16% to around 25-26%. And do you feel that sometimes you didn't get the, you know, because I know that you would have taken over from Tony Leon, but in the time that you spent as leader, there was a significant increase in the growth of the party. Do you sometimes look back and think that you didn't get enough credit for that particular effort that you put in? Or do you think, you know, you made your mark and that's what you needed to do at that particular point and you did it?
Well, I did it, and I never did it to be recognized or to be praised by anybody. I mean, that's never been my motivation.
No, I don't even mean as in, you know, to be recognized and praised, but I mean it was an achievement over a pretty shortish period of time.
Yes, look, it was a big achievement. I mean, we went from 12% to the heights that you were talking about. And yes, it was a big achievement, but I didn't do it on my own. I had a huge team working with me, and I enjoyed every minute of it. I really felt we were contributing to South Africa. We reached a plateau. Now we're growing again very nicely, and so it's very encouraging. You know, my parents were refugees from their home country, and I never wanted to see my family scattered over the world again. So South Africa was our home, and I wanted to make sure South Africa could be an inclusive and wonderful and home for everybody with great prospect.
So when you're doing what you do, Helen, whether it's leader of the party or mayor, you know, within the structures of the party, and or, you know, your present federal council chairperson right now. What is it about the party? What is it that you ultimately, in all of these roles, what's the one goal that you keep that's there? I mean, in every single role, there would be, you know, there would be objectives. Of course, there'd be immediate objectives, long-term objectives. But what's the Helen Ziller ultimate goal? What is it that Helen Ziller wants to see before, you know, her and I both leave this world?
Well, I mean, you can only play your part for the time that you're in this world, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But my overall goal is for South Africa to be a successful democracy and a prosperous country with a future for everybody. That has been my motivating force since I was a schoolgirl and joined the Progressive Party then.
What does a successful democracy mean to you, Helen? What does it look like?
Well, a successful democracy looks like this. It has the rule of law and constitutionalism, which basically means that one person or a group of people can't grab all the power and subjugate everybody and impose their will on the society. So it means, for example, regular elections, but not only regular elections. It means that nobody is above the law. It means that if you're the president or whoever you are subject to the same law and and bound even more than other people to upholding that law. So you don't become a majoritarian democracy where the majority will counts and the majority can subjugate a minority. No, that's not a successful democracy. A successful democracy is a constitutional democracy where the rules of the game apply to every single person and majorities can't overrule the rules of the game. They have to abide by the rules of the game. That's number one. Number two, it's where there's no corruption, good, clean government, competent government that delivers services and attracts lots of investment so that the private sector can grow the economy and get people into more and more jobs so they don't have to live in poverty, they don't have to rely on grants. It's a country where parents take very profound responsibility for the children they bring into this world, that they make absolutely sure that their children are loved and cherished, and that the society makes sure that the children who haven't got parents are also loved and cherished and included in society. It means a society where everyone takes their responsibilities seriously and does their duty. That's what I call a successful democracy.
Is the Western Cape an example of that, you think, because you've been able to govern, is it since 2006, around
six,
there?
Yeah, 2006. Look, we're not perfect by any manner of means, but we're making much better progress than the rest of the country. I mean, we don't have corrupt government. Obviously, human beings are frail and fragile and make mistakes. So if somebody corrupt happens to emerge in the DA, they get shown the door very, very quickly and usually handed over to the police if the corruption is a criminal offence. So you can't be corrupt and survive in the DA. And so we have good, clean government. That is why there's much more investment where the DA governs than where the ANC governs. We have a situation where the DA upholds the rule of law. And that's why we want to take over the police where we govern, for example, in the Western Cape and in the city of Cape Town and other DA-run local authorities, because we believe that the police have been captured by gangs, that they are racked by criminality and corruption. And we want to get rid of that because we are not a corrupt party and we don't believe in corrupt government. So we are growing economies. I mean, we haven't got it right yet to, for example, get people to take enough responsibility to stop littering all over the place, or to throw things in drains so that drains get blocked and flood the place. We're not nearly at a point where we can say that every single teacher is present, punctual, and prepared for everything they do every single day in our schools. We're not at the point where we are attracting sufficient investment because people have enough confidence in the future of the country. And we're sadly not at a point where people take responsibility for their own lives, for example, to ensure that they practice safe sex, to ensure that if they have children, they really take responsibility for their children. And far too many men still make babies and walk away from them. And, of course, that means that we're a long way off from the society that I envisage. But we have to make progress every single day.
Sure. Helen, then, if I look back at the Western Cape and I look at some of your readings, somewhere at some point you say the victory in the Western Cape was one where you as the DA have the ability to showcase what you can do as the party, the DA, and two, ultimately, the bigger picture is what the power of the vote is. Do you still stick to those two fundamentals there?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, people get the government they vote for. Now, in the Western Cape, people do think that the DA produces better government than any other party, and they vote for it. Now, that doesn't mean to say we're perfect, but when they go to any other province or other cities outside the Western Cape that aren't under the DA, they get the fright of their lives. And they think, my goodness, you know, we may have complaints, and everybody all over the world has complaints, but my goodness, in comparison, we're doing much, much better. Now, that doesn't mean to say we're doing well enough. There's always room for continuous improvement. But where you vote for good, corruption-free government, you will get an improvement in your life. And that is our message. And, you know, in 2026, we will have been under DA government for 30 years in Cape Town and in the Western Cape. And you will see how the difference then between where the DA governs and where other parties govern, the difference it becomes more and more stark and more obvious because the places under DA government will make more and more progress.
Helen, when you listen to some of the crits, and there's a lot of the crits of the DA and some of its leaders, some people will say, you know, because of the Western Cape and the establishment of the Western Cape and the Western Cape as a stronghold, some people would argue and when they write, they say it's a regional party with regional reach and limited appeal. And you know, when they say that, they mean that the party hasn't really been able to replicate that anywhere across the rest of the country because, you know, by now, as you mentioned, you know, 30 years is on the clock. One would have expected other people to have seen that, South Africans to have seen what's going on in the Western Cape and said, we want some of that.
Yes, indeed. One would have certainly expected that. But you see, people who say we haven't broken out of the Western Cape must be living under a rock. Because last time I looked, we had all the major cities in Gauteng were under DA mayor.
And I'm talking of a more formal component, Helen. I'm pretty much aware of all the coalitions that are going on, and I really want to get there. I'm talking of a more formal component where you would have, for example, in the Western Cape, taken over the mayorship at first, taken over the metropolitan first, and run that pretty well over 5 years, and then in the pretty next election, you showed what you could do, and then in the pretty next election, you know, people vote for you as the Democratic Alliance because obviously of the single footprint that you had. You've had the single footprint of the Western Cape as a province for pretty long time. Why is that message? Why is that message not being read by more South Africans?
It is. It certainly is.
Sure.
And that's why the ANC has fallen so far under 50%. I mean, not long ago, you'll remember in August, Rapport, the newspaper, the Sunday newspaper, published a poll in which the DA was only 11 percentage points behind the ANC nationally. That poll had the ANC on 38% of the vote nationally and the DA on 27%. That's only 27 percentage, only 11 percentage points different between 27% and 38%. And it shows you just exactly how much South Africans are seeing the difference. And if all opposition voters united behind the DA, we would overtake the ANC in 2024, and we would be able to be the key pillar of a new coalition. So, you know, people are seeing that, and if you look at the trends, it becomes very obvious. The Social Research Foundation has just done a major research across South Africa's urban areas,
mm.
and they find that in urban South Africa, the DA is now bigger than the ANC. The DA is at 37%,
mm.
and the ANC is at 33%.
Mm. And that's in metro. That's in metropolitans. Mm.
That's in urban South Africa.
Yeah, urban South Africa, yes.
You see, so that means that in the cities, the DA has overtaken the ANC and is now the biggest party in South Africa.
Mm.
That's huge. But you see, these things never get reported by the media, even though they come out as polls. They very rarely get reported because the media has an incredible bias against the DA.
Mm.
If they didn't have such a bias, we would have grown much more quickly and we would have been able to save South Africa much sooner.
Mm.
I'd love to understand why this incredible bias exists. Maybe you can help me understand that.
Helen, I was about to just ask you.
Well, how am I supposed to know? I'm not in the media.
Okay, let's talk about this bias of the media towards the DA also. When you do see a lot of the reportage and when you do see a lot of the commentary around the DA, two words come to mind. One would be one racist and the other would be arrogant. And I just name those as terminology that either would be, you know, talked about if one began to talk about and if you began to read the media aspect or the media as well, because we're talking about black people leaving the DA. We're talking about black, the DA not caring about black constituencies. We're talking about the DA not caring enough of, you know, once they engage in a particular area and they've won there. These are the narratives that are out there. The two words I did use would be and I'd see if you agree. The one would be racist and the other one would be arrogant.
Now you see, this is what puzzles me because those are two completely invented narratives.
Mm.
Completely invented. There is nothing racist about the DA.
Mm.
The DA is the only non-racial party in South Africa. Now, let's look at all the evidence. The media never looks at the evidence because they just take a label and use it to cover up the fact that they haven't got a rational argument.
Mm.
And when people start using labels against you, it basically means they haven't got any rational argument left.
Mm.
Now, let's look at non-racialism. The DA is a non-racial party.
Mm.
We have a completely inclusive leadership. When people say black leaders are leaving the DA, that's completely not true.
Mm.
What we have is a voluntary association because all political parties are voluntary associations.
Mm.
And people of all colors in all parties come and go. We have lost about five, six people who happen to be black. We've lost far more who happen to be white.
Mm.
But the media just ignores that. About five or six who happen to be black in the last 4 or 5 years.
Mm.
That's nothing. Most other parties have lost far, far more.
Mm.
Action South Africa lost more black leaders in 1 week in one province, KwaZulu-Natal, earlier this year, than we'd lost in the past 4 years. But the point I'm making is that the media only picks it up when it's the DA and only picks it up when the person who's leaving the DA is black.
Mm.
They completely ignore the scores of black people who have come to the DA and been elected as public representatives and are moving upwards through the ranks of the DA into leadership. Those people are, to the media, just chopped liver.
Mm.
The media couldn't care how many black leaders come to the DA, get elected in the DA. They're 450, over 450 black African elected public representatives in the DA.
Mm.
They are in key leadership positions. They are the chief whip of the party, provincial leaders, on the federal executive, in the national management committee. They are all over. But they are completely and deliberately ignored to drive this false narrative. Now, it's amazing that in South Africa today, to be non-racial is to be racist. There is this incredible madness that has seized the English-speaking world, that in order to be that to be non-racial is actually to be racist, to be progressive is to only see people's race and to judge them according to their race. Mm. And we reject that out of hand. We basically believe that people should be judged, as Martin Luther King said, by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. And we are the only party that practices what we preach in that sense.
Mm.
If you look at the ANC has a top five. They no longer have a top six. They have a top five.
Mm.
Every single one of that top five is a black African male.
Mm.
If the DA had the mirror image of that, we would be hounded out of court. That is completely racist, only to have one color. And not only that, one sex, male. Mm. That's complete nonsense. If the DA had to do that, you would understand what the furor would be about.
Mm.
Once upon a time, when I was still very committed to the ANC in the 1980s, it was a genuinely non-racial movement. Now it isn't anymore.
Mm.
It's driven out all the whites except Karl Niehaus.
Karl Niehaus. Mm.
Yeah, so, I mean, why isn't the media up in arms about the racism of the ANC?
Mm. You want a chance at an answer to that, Helen?
How do you mean?
Tell me exactly.
It's a complete double standard.
Mm.
And the media are all trained in these critical race theory cauldrons of these technicons and universities, and they come out thinking four legs good, two legs bad, just like George Orwell.
Mm.
Four legs being black people are good, mm. two legs being white people are bad.
Mm.
And they just define it like that, and they judge people by the color of their skin.
Mm.
And even if a party that many white people support is entirely non-racial, with a third of its support base being black, a third being colored, and a third being white, somehow, just because white people also support that party,
mm.
we're somehow then defined as racist.
So, Helen, how are you going to make inroads? How are you going to make inroads into...
We are going to work mm. for sanity.
Mm.
We are making inroads.
Mm.
We have been growing in every single by-election except one we had last week when we lost to the Freedom Front Plus.
Mm.
So in every other election, we've been growing, and we've been growing amongst all communities, every single one,
mm.
from deep rural to urban. We take on every community across the board.
Mm.
And, you know, in the end, you have to believe that people are rational.
Mm.
In the end, you think that people will see through these labels
mm.
that are completely meaningless and, in fact, actually tell you more about the people using those labels against others than about the people that they're using them against.
I don't really want to get into the...
Racist mm. has become totally meaningless mm. in South Africa.
I really don't want to... Sure. I don't really want to get into the element of that Freedom Front by-election. And I've been watching the DA in the by-elections, and obviously there is a bit of growth there. What is this one by-election with the Freedom Front Plus? What is the answer there? What's your analysis telling you there? Because that seemingly and the numbers too in that particular by-election seemingly quite surprising as well. What's in there before I raise it, because you've just raised it and I might not move to it again, but I'd really like to have an understanding of how you saw that particular by-election.
Yes, certainly, and I'll be happy to mm. tell you, but I first want to point out something to you
mm-hmm.
which you might find interesting.
Mm.
We've had a whole run of by-elections in which we've done spectacularly well
mm.
and then we had this one loss.
Yeah.
And you are focusing on the one loss.
No, I'm trying to work out,
now,
Helen.
That's mm. what creates the false narrative.
No, Helen.
That's what I'm saying.
No, Helen.
I will ask you a question.
Wait, Helen. 30 seconds ago, Helen, I said my own analysis tells me that you've been growing in the by-elections, but I really would like your understanding, because I, as an observer, also was quite surprised by it. And I'm really, really keen to understand why... You know, that would have happened for no other reason than to single it out explicitly.
Okay, well, let's single that out explicitly.
Mm.
Ironically, if we were racist,
mm.
we would not be losing by-elections to the Freedom Front Plus. Now, we've only lost one of them.
Mm.
But the media says nothing about that because it runs completely counter to the media's narrative about us, completely. And I'll tell you why. We look at every single time we do well in a by-election, every single by-election, we analyze very, very carefully whether we do well or middlingly or badly. This was one and one of the very few that we've done badly in. And our analysis is as follows. It's a Bila Bila, that is the old warm baths in Limpopo. It was Ward 1. It was a DA ward before. We had a councillor, his councillor Russ. He was elected last year in November. And shortly after that, he had a family tragedy. And he left Bila Bila and he came to the Cape. And for a long time, that community was not serviced by a DA councillor. And the Freedom Front Plus moved into that vacuum and started servicing that community. And it was an anomaly. The DA does not do that. But this was a specific set of circumstances where the community did feel abandoned by a DA councillor. And was, in fact, abandoned by a DA councillor, which should never have happened. We should have picked that up immediately and moved into the vacuum there. We've certainly put medical mechanisms in place to ensure that that never happens again. And so the community felt that they'd had better service in the absence of a DA councillor from a particular very, very energetic Freedom Front Plus person. And that is why they voted for that person in the election. So that is how you can explain it's an anomaly, and it happened. And I think we're going to have another little bump in another by-election coming soon. But if you look at the rest of the by-elections, I mean, the growth has been spectacular. Look at a place like Careerburg, which was an ANC ward. I mean, there in the last election, we got, I think we got something like 13%, and we grew to 43% in just 7 months. That's spectacular.
What do you put that growth to, Ellen?
Well, getting the right candidate in a by-election. If you get the right candidate in a by-election, as we see in Bila Bila, you know, the Freedom Front Plus had somebody who'd been servicing that ward when the DA council left for the Cape. So, you know, you get the right candidate in the by-election and you're halfway there. But it also comes from people just seeing other places where the DA governs. So in Careerburg, we grew from 13% to 43%. In Van Reinsdorp, that is in Matsikama, we grew from 22% to 62%. That's a 40% increase in a few months. We grew in Lambertsville. I mean, just the other week, we, in Etiquini ward, we had 95% of the votes. In Ward 5, Cape Town, we had over 90% of the votes. In Lambert's Bay, we got a nice win in the Karoo in Prince Albert. We took that ward, and we were absolutely delighted to, because we'd always lost it. We took about 44 votes. And so we've been growing spectacularly all over. We had an incredible run of good results. And then we've had this one club last week. And that's always, it's not a bad thing to get a club, because you sit up, you take notice, you analyze, you learn the lessons, you incorporate those lessons in your system, and you move on.
See, Helen, if I hadn't asked that question, I would be none the wiser.
Well, now you are.
Helen, so change, imminent, possible, and do you think that our democracy is being tested properly?
Look, you know, we certainly in the DA work absolutely day and night to make sure that South Africa is successful and that our democracy works. It's a long haul. No one said it would ever be a quick fix. It's going to be difficult. We're a very complex plural society, and it is very sobering to understand that in the past, no country has really succeeded in building a democracy off a base like ours. So we would be in the vanguard of world experience if we were to get it right. I do believe that we can get it right. I believe we've got the caliber of people who are prepared to put in the work and who will get it right. So I'm confident about that. I've got my children and my grandchildren here in South Africa, and that's why I really want the country to work. Obviously, I want it to work for everybody's children and grandchildren, not just my own.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, one step at a time. It takes a very long time. I mean, it's no coincidence that it's over 800 years since the Magna Carta was produced in Britain. That's how long it took them to fully consolidate a democracy. Mm. And, you know, the fight for democracy is never finally fought and won. It has to be fought again in every single generation who has to reassert freedoms, accountability, the rule of law, those sorts of things.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Okay. So, Helen, I've got a few callers, Matunjwa, Vuyani, and Selo. But I need to ask you this before I move to the callers. An upper-middle-class income country. We had established infrastructure, and I don't want to get into the debate about where the rail system is now and where Eskom is now and wherever, but an established infrastructure, I'll give it that. Wealth of natural resources, sound financial institutions, the way, you know, we bank and get on with our lives, and yet we can't keep the lights on. Education, some of it is purely ranked. Highest crime rates, numbers, rape, highest in the world sometimes. And malnutrition, prominent. The youth feel like they don't have jobs. So here's the two side by side. The upper middle income country, established infrastructure, wealth and natural resources, sound financial institutions, and yet, you know, the other side looks bleak.
Well, the infrastructure's collapsing by the day.
Mm.
And it's certainly not only the electricity infrastructure and the rail infrastructure. It's the sewage infrastructure, it's the water infrastructure, it's the road infrastructure. We're doing very well at getting rid of the legacy of colonialism. Every single bit of it is being destroyed.
Mm.
The universities are being destroyed. You know, when I drive around some parts of the rest of the country, I just can't believe what's happened there. You know, I just cannot believe what's happened there.
Mm.
So the infrastructure is in a process of advanced collapse in many parts of this country. So let's understand that you will never have economic growth and you will never have jobs if the government can't keep the lights on.
Mm.
Because no business is going to ever invest in a country where there's no electricity.
Mm.
I mean, businesses need to have electricity absolutely reliably. And if you open any business that you can think of, you cannot run it without electricity and reliable electricity.
Mm.
And if you're having stage four load shedding and you're running a restaurant or you're running a little small business with sewing machines or you're running absolutely any business, like, you know, gardening service, you can talk about any business you like. You cannot run it without electricity.
Mm.
And if businesses don't have clean running water, proper sewerage, proper transport infrastructure, and good electricity, they're not going to invest.
Mm.
And that's where you get the increased joblessness. Then, if you don't have access to ports, and the ports are as inefficient as our ports authority is, then people aren't able to export their products. And what happens next is they have to go to Maputo.
Mm.
A company called Grindrods, which is based in Durban in South Africa, eThekwini, runs the Maputo port very, very well. But the government wants to run our ports here through Portnet. So what happens is South Africans who want to export their goods send them to Maputo, where a South African company is running the ports, but those South African companies can't get their goods through the South African ports because of the incredible mismanagement and corruption.
Mm.
And if you're not prepared to pay something, for example, then your goods can't come through and whatever it is, I have heard, it is too terrible, which is why more and more people are exporting their products by road to Maputo to export their stuff to the world through Maputo's port because South African ports don't work.
Mm.
Now, if that is the situation, how are we going to get the economy to grow? How are we going to get education to improve if we don't have the infrastructure in schools? that have toilets, water, electricity, and today connectivity. I made it my absolute point when I was the Premier of the Western Cape to get connectivity into every single school. And above all, if teachers don't arrive, present, punctual, and prepared every day, and if the students don't come, present, punctual, and prepared every day, and if parents don't place the education of their kids as the highest priority, we need all of that cultural change if we want to make a difference.
Sure.
We need that cultural change. And don't think for a minute that there is this kind of wonderful upper middle class South Africa with all of the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Middle class people pay very high tax rates. We have amongst the highest tax rates in the world.
Mm-hmm.
7 million registered provisional taxpayers pay by far the majority of the taxes in South Africa, and about 18 million people are dependent on social grants. That is not an upper middle income country.
Mm.
And it shows an incredible dependence of millions and millions of poor people on a handful of people who pay the taxes primarily, the registered personal taxpayers who pay personal income tax. And it shows how vulnerable this country is to emigration. If people leave this country more and more, who are paying taxes, there'll be less and less money. And as the ANC steals more and more, there will be less and less money to pay those social grants.
Helen, let's go to the lines. Helen, Matunjwa in Dundee. Matunjwa?
Evening, Tanzan.
How are you, bro?
Evening, Kok. When I talk on it, let me tell you something. You, an organization, do not deserve to be in our democratic parliament because you are a racist. And tell me, how many people left the organization just because of racism? And I saw here in KZN, you want to corrupt IFP. You want to be in bed with IFP. However, you and IFP, you are a same WhatsApp group. Thank you very much, Denzel.
Vuyani in Orange Farm, Vuyani.
How are you, Denzel?
I'm good, Vuyani.
Good. How are you, Mamuzule?
I'm fine, thanks, Vuyani.
I'm fine. I just want to ask you, there's something that is bothering me.
Sure, sure.
There's this, I don't know, is an advert or what, where you are saying those who, I won't put it vertically, but I'll put it along the lines. But where you are saying those who think alike or whatsoever, come and join the DA into taking the ANC out. I understand that.
Mm.
But now, the way you put it, why are you saying come and join the DA? Because once you say to me, come and join the DA, it's like, let's follow you.
Okay. Let's go to Cello in Centurion. Cello?
Hi, Denzel. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, man.
Denzel,
yes.
You know, that's one thing I want to ask Mrs. Zilla, because I remember at some point she said a person is just based on his character. If she said that, when they had a leader like Musi, who according to my thinking and the way I actually know him, he's a person of good character. And then afterwards, after he left the party and they said he was an experiment, what did they mean by that?
Sure. Collie and Ermelo? Collie?
Hey, Brother Denzel, long time no talk to you, my brother.
Absolutely. Collie, how are you?
Greetings to the Coco, the racist Coco.
She can hear you, bro.
Okay. Thank you very much, my brother. My brother, look, in my area, we'll never vote for this racist Coco. We are natives, indigenous natives. And we are indigenous natives who are well-informed because we have embarked on a journey to emancipate ourselves from mental slavery. So we understand very clearly what she represents. She represents oppression of Africans. That's why they came here.
Okay. Tolly, I've got so many callers coming in. Stephen in Amanskraal.
Yeah, Denzel, you know, I told you that you are not supposed to be here. You must be at 12 to 3 so that we can be free to talk.
Uh-huh.
Now, is very short.
Sure.
No, I'll talk when you are back there. Ask them to take you back there so that we can talk.
Let's have a question quickly for Helen Zilichief. What's your question?
My question was, according to Zille's assessment, who can bring this country back to morality, where there is no corruption, where there's nobody that is stealing, That is my question.
Sure, Stephen. Stephen, let's go to Lucky in Tembisa. Lucky?
Denzi, how are you?
I'm
good. Two questions to Helen, man.
Sure, bro.
Why doesn't she want to work with EFF? Is it that the racism, because EFF is a black party and it stands for truth and it stands for black people? And one other thing to Helen, is it nice to be racist? Why are there so much racism in their head?
Lucky in Tembisa, that's Lucky in Tembisa. Girls, Golden Miles Budu, you're the last one in this round. Golden?
Very, very quickly, my brother. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to know from Helen Ziller, what would her intake be when I say she knows that sentenced and unsentenced prisoners do vote? What would she say if I say to her and ask her, would they be interested in prisoners' votes? Because a vote is a vote, doesn't matter where it comes from.
Golden Miles Budu. Huh. Helen, I started off the conversation, Helen, saying, you know, you've either got to be wearing a raincoat or you've got to have strong armory. And you know, you've been one to take the criticism. And you said you've been in the game a long time and you understand the criticism. Some of it a bit harsh there. And some of it pretty personal as well. How do you respond, Helen?
You know, when I listen to people like Matunjwa and Solly and Lucky, I kind of feel sad for them because they don't even know me. Mm. They've never met me. They don't know what I've done with my life. They don't know what I have, how I've behaved. Mm. And what my inputs have been to people's lives in material terms and in other terms, they have no idea. And they are happy to just take a word that is meaningless in South Africa and throw it around without any analysis behind it. So Matunjwa, Solly, and even Lucky have proved my point that when you've got no rational argument, you just take a label and you put it on someone that you don't even know and that you've never met because you want to denigrate them because you haven't got a point of view to put across. Mm. So that's all I have to say to them. And that is why this country will really battle to become a success, because people just grab those labels and believe that they've got some kind of argument that holds water when it's literally going to take them and the country down the drain. Then I look at Vuyani, he says, well, why do we say come and join the DA? Well, we do say come and join the DA because we're a successful organization. We've got strong internal institutions, and where we govern, life gets better for everybody. So I don't know what he wants us to say. Our job is to grow the DA. And if he wants to join another party, obviously he's free to in a democracy, but there's no party that will organize as well and bring the results that the DA will. Then Sello said, we say I must judge a person according to his character, not the color of his skin. Of course, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That is what we believe and that is what we do. But let's just look at Musi Maimane's case. I've got nothing against Musi Maimane. I believe he's a nice person. He was the leader of the DA, and the DA started losing votes in all demographics. You know, when I stood back from being the leader of the DA was growing its votes in across all demographics. We had a very, very strong organization and a blue machine, and we had a lot of money. And 4 years later, when I was asked to stand again for the chair of the Federal Council after I had retired from the DA, from active politics, I was asked to come back because the blue machine, as we used to call it, was breaking down. We were well on the road to becoming bankrupt, and we were losing votes in every demographic. Now, that had happened in 4 short years. Mm. And Musi Maimane set up a commission of inquiry to see why things were going wrong. And he picked the people. He chose the people. And those people said, it is your weak leadership that is leading to the demise of the DA. So the people that he picked said, not that you're a bad person or that you're an evil person. It's just that you're not a good leader. That's what that panel said to him. And it said that if you want to fix the DA, the first thing you have to do is step down. That is why he stepped down. It had nothing to do with me. And to blame me is just to try and find a scapegoat. So that is why he stepped down. Now, I and the DA have never said that any human being on this planet is an experiment. We decided to do something new with a party, and that could be described, as Tony Leon did, as an experimental path that we were taking the party on. But no human being is an experiment, and we would never call a human being an experiment. I certainly would never do that.
2016. Carry on, Helen.
Carry on. Stephen asked, what is my assessment how we can bring back morality into this country? Well, you know, I have a very simple recipe for morality. It's a very simple one, but it's very hard to live by. Always tell the truth. Search for the truth and tell the truth. That's number one. The second thing is take responsibility for the things that you are responsible for, especially your children and especially the jobs that you're supposed to do. Take responsibility and don't duck your responsibility. So number one, tell the truth. Number two, take responsibility. For example, even littering is a lack of responsibility because you're throwing your stuff around that you think other people should pick up. Then the third is defer gratification. Do what you have to do, not what you feel like doing. So if you've got work to do, but you'd rather go out and drink and get blind drunk, rather do your work. And the fourth is make good judgments in the difficult situations of life. And if you make good and ethical judgments, if you always tell the truth, if you take responsibility, and if you do what you have to do and not what you feel like doing, we will bring back morality to this country. It's a four-point recipe that I raised my own children with, that I'm raising my grandchildren with, and it's the way I was raised. Always search for the truth and tell it. Always take responsibility. Always do what you have to do, not what you feel like doing, and then make good judgments on the difficult path of life, which is a very hard thing to do. If you do that, you will bring back morality into our society. That is the culture I was raised in, and it's, for me, an ethical and moral culture.
My guest tonight is Helen Ziller, the DA's Federal Council Chairperson, gladly agreeing to stay for a conversation beyond the news bulletin. Let me bring Helen Ziller back into the conversation. Helen, 2016 and the ushering in of coalition politics, really, was that a game changer for the DA, game changer for South Africa?
Well, that was in 2006. You know, it was in 2006 when we first had our first coalition.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yes. That's the Western Cape one.
No, that was the Cape Town one.
Yes, the Cape Town one. Yes.
Yeah. We had a seven-party coalition in Cape Town.
Yeah.
And we've been running coalitions ever since then. So it wasn't only 2016.
Does 2016 stand out then as the beginning of change?
No. 2016 was actually a setback for us because none of those coalitions worked. I mean, we had Herman Mashaba becoming the mayor of Johannesburg in a coalition, but in order to hold the EFF in, everybody recognizes he effectively became the EFF's mayor. He was closer to the EFF than he was to his own caucus in the DA. And, of course, it started getting tremendous resentment from his own caucus because we have a very different political philosophy from the EFF. A previous caller, just let me quickly see who it was. I think it was Lucky said, well, you know, why don't we work with the EFF? The reason we don't work with the EFF is because they have an exact opposite political philosophy from us. We believe in non-racialism. They believe in racial nationalism. We believe in an open society with the rule of law and a constitution. and we believe in a market economy with social safety nets, that is, grants for the poor. They don't believe that at all. They're against the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
They believe in this party must control the state and the state must control society. That's the recipe for totalitarianism and mass poverty. But the EFF believes that, and it's fooled a lot of people into thinking that that's in their interests when it is exactly not in their interests.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we are the very opposite of the EFF. And so when the DA mayor starts becoming closer to the EFF than he is to the DA, then there's a major problem. So we had a lot of problems with our coalitions in 2016. Our Cape Town coalition in 2007 was a success, and we've had other successful coalitions, a lot of them, but our Gauteng coalitions were not successful, and that created a huge set of challenges for us.
Let's talk about coalitions, and I think there's a vote of no confidence in Johannesburg tomorrow. Are you, and I mean, you know, you'd be central to those conversations that are happening there. Wednesday and Thursday, big days here in Johannesburg, big days here in Gauteng. What are your conversations with the Democratic Party here in Gauteng around, and specifically Johannesburg, around the vote of no confidence that placed again, the courts determined otherwise the last time around, but you know, this time around, what are you looking at as the best and worst case scenarios here?
Well, obviously the best case scenario is that the Democrats stand together and that we beat back the motion of no confidence. And that would be the best case scenario. The people who believe in following the will of the people who said they didn't want an ANC government in Johannesburg, and they can beat the ANC's motion of no confidence. It comes from the smaller parties, but it's basically the ANC's partners in Johannesburg. That's the best case scenario. And the worst case scenario is that we lose.
And with that loss, you walk away from it and say, you know what, we tried, we've given it a shot. Joburgers and Gautengers will know the difference between those who are now running it and those who ran it before?
Well, you know, it's very difficult to make a big difference in 1 year after you've inherited such a broken city, and Johannesburg is deeply broken. So it's very hard to make a difference in 1 year, especially when you have an 8 or 9 party coalition to try and hold together that's constantly having very big internal problems to deal with. But that is what the people of Johannesburg voted for. And I don't ever blame the voters. They voted for that, but then they mustn't blame the politicians when it's very difficult to govern, because voters get the government that they voted for. So, you know, we really do hope that we can pull it through and that we can stabilize the coalition and that we can start showing people a DA difference. But it would help to do that if they gave us a solid majority with which to do that. And that we didn't have to face a motion of no confidence every second week.
Let's get this out of the way. Lots of people, when they do write, and I'll go back to the media again, Helen, and your perception and of them, when they do write and they talk about the differences between you and Mpho Phalatse around the EFF and around particular positions. I've had Mpho Phalatse here in studio around 3 times at least, and she speaks with only of the highest regard of you. What is the true reflection of that relationship with you and Mpho?
Yes, I have the highest regard for Mpho. I mean, I've spoken to her earlier tonight again, and we discussed tomorrow and the events of tomorrow. I've got the highest regard for Mpho. She is focused. She's hardworking. She is dedicated. She can take the strain. You know, all those qualities don't come every day in one person. She's also immaculately groomed, unlike me. And so, you know, I back her all the way, and I do my very best to offer what help the party can do, although we recognize the separation between party and state.
and the support base has always been there. I mean, she says you've always supported her, and she feels that she's someone. I think she said to me, she's someone she can lean on. Actually, that you are someone she can lean on.
Well, I'm absolutely thrilled to hear that, because that's my job. It's part of my job. I have the governance unit report to me, and that is something that every single DA person in a government anywhere in the country should feel they can lean on. So that's wonderful to hear that.
Let's move on a little bit to Congress. And yes. You're facing your own Congress. I know the elements of the ANC are pretty soon upon us, and you've already described that as being in terminal decline. So let's leave them for a second. Congress, and you're up for position, John's up for position, and everybody else would of course be up for position. You're going to stand, are you?
Yes, I think I am going to stand, yes.
And reasons for why you would stand would be work unfinished, job undone, still something to be, still needed to be done, mission not accomplished yet?
Well, there is still a lot of work to do, and I've started doing a lot of overhauling of the DA systems and processes, and that seems to be bearing fruit, so I would love to finish that job. I'm also feeling very energetic and on top of things. I love my work. I like working late into the night from early in the morning. And it gives me a purpose in life. But much more importantly, I think I'm helping to move South Africa along towards a sustainable democracy. And that is what I'd like to continue doing.
Is John still the right man for the job? Would you undoubtedly give him?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, John has about the best political instinct that I've ever come across in a person. He absolutely instinctively reads situations very, very well. And we work very well together. I stay in my lane. I take his leadership, obviously. As he is the leader of the party, he sets the tone, he sets the direction. And I do the administrative interface, which I also enjoy doing.
Absolutely. Helen, lastly, and I have to ask you this. This is Jacob Zuma, and of course, within a case recently in front of the Supreme Court of Appeal, respondent number one, respondent number two, respondent number three. The DA is obviously there. The Helen Suzman Foundation is obviously there. I think the other political party, AfriForum, with the application in front. That suggested to the Supreme Court that Jacob Zuma ultimately, return back to, and I'll just talk of the verdict now. Jacob Zuma returned back to prison, and that he served the rest of his term in prison. You've actually gone a little further in the DA and said now that the courts have ruled in this particular matter. 48 hours is the time he should actually, pack his bags and report at the particular prison.
Yes, that is correct. He should never have been let out of prison. He was let out of prison under false pretenses. It was an unlawful act, and that illegality needs to be ended, and Jacob Zuma needs to finish his term in prison.
And other people who would... Yesterday I had a legal expert who suggested that because of the parole issue, he would have been a detainee in a sense, serving that or serving a particular period at home. Would you see that counting, or that would not be an argument because, when the wrong was ultimately done, it brought about a different result, but you have to go back to correcting the wrong and ultimately go back to prison. You don't see the argument that says the parole conditions and the parole that he served might be actual time served, as an illegal opinion put in front of one.
No, because the parole should never have happened. The parole was unlawful. So you can't count an unlawful act towards the time that he served in prison. He must first serve enough time in prison before he's eligible for parole.
Helen Zilla, I want to say thank you so much for joining me on Power Perspective tonight. Thank you so much, ma'am.
It's a great pleasure, Denzel, and thank you very much. Thanks to your listeners, and thanks to the people who called in. And those
Helen?
Who throw...
Yeah. Helen, would you mind, I've got Lennox, Kutso, and Tabang who've just come in. Would you mind just taking short questions from them?
I don't mind.
Absolutely.
Lennox, you said.
Let's just take those three quickly. Lennox?
Evening, Denzel, and evening to Helen, and thank you for staying a bit longer.
Sure.
Quick one. South Africa is far behind in terms of transformation.
Sure, sure.
You know, on the front of commercial equity, employment equity, and redistribution of land, for instance. And those are constitutional imperatives.
Mm.
As far as I know, the DA does espouse the Constitution, and does the DA have anything in its agenda that can get to address that particular ill that we are currently facing 28 years down the line in democracy? Thank you.
Thank you, Lennox. Kutso?
Thanks, Denzel. Mm-hmm. Good evening. My question would be, when leaders are elected, are they given a mandate, or do the leadership, especially Helen, do they interfere with their kind of leadership skills, and are they able to express themselves efficiently in their roles?
Good, so thank you so much. Tabang and Centurion?
Hey, big brother, how's it, man?
I'm good, bro. How are you, man?
Bless you, man. This is Ellen. My Helen, how are you?
She can hear
my
you,
question,
Chief.
Quickly. My question is simple. What is the plan? What is the vision of DA in terms of coalition? Because these things are not working. They are failing, and the people that are suffering as people on the ground. What is the vision beyond coalition? And number two, Brother Denzel, to all power members, let us be constructive in terms of criticizing. We cannot come in here and call a person a racist without asking genuine questions. At the end of the day, we ask questions bitter, but we don't get what we want. Let us respect each other. It doesn't matter whether we know that Sis Helen is a racist or whatever, but let us respect the issue that you have called her for us in order for us to ask questions. Let us respect her. Tabang. I'm not a DA member, but I just wanted to say, when we call, let us be constructive.
Tabang. Tabang is in Centurion. Helen Zilla, you can start with Tabang, Helen.
Yes, well, Tabang, you know, if you knew me, and anybody who does know me knows I'm not racist.
Mm.
So as long as you know yourself, you know your values and your vision, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. You know, many people run around their whole lives looking for reasons to be offended. I don't do that. People say offensive things to me all the time. I choose not to be offended because I think it's more a reflection on them than it is on me. So, you know, I'm glad there are people like you out there who think that it's inappropriate to do that. But there are lots of people in South Africa today, and ironically, the ones who are always the most offended and always looking for reasons to be offended are always the most offensive towards others. I found that to be true all of the time. So I have learned to just ignore people who haven't got rational arguments and let them carry on raging and being offensive. That's up to them. Let them live their little lives in that way. I prefer to live my life engaging with people who are prepared to have a rational debate like you, Tabang. So I really appreciate that. Now, let me say my vision for coalitions. Well, coalitions are very difficult when there's 6 or 7 parties or 8 or 9 parties. And then Nelson Mandela Baby's now got a 10-party coalition. So
good luck with that, Helen.
Yeah. My vision for coalitions is that you have 2 or maybe 3 strong big parties that can form a coalition, that people stop fracturing the votes between every single tiny little party. Because in the end, people don't serve the electorate. They're just looking for their own positions and their own ways of leveraging their positions and getting what they can for themselves, and they don't serve the voters. So if we're going to have coalitions, let's have 2 or maybe maximum 3 big parties that can actually do something in a coalition and start delivering on their mandate. So it's obviously much better for the DA to win an overall majority. We have an overall majority in the Western Cape. We have an overall majority in Cape Town. And we have an overall majority in many, many provinces. I mean, we have an overall majority in Ngeni. We have an overall majority in Midvale. We have a number of places. We have an overall majority in Kucha, in that part of the world around Jeffreys Bay.
Yeah.
etc. So those places run perfectly, and it runs much better when there's a DA overall majority, I can tell you that. And they do well, and they are delivering more and more on their mandate. The money isn't stolen and that sort of thing. So that's good.
Mm.
Then Leonard, he says South Africa is far behind in terms of transformation.
Mm.
Well, the best way of getting transformation in the economy is to grow the economy,
mm.
to get it growing really, really fast, and to take every barrier to growth away. Because if the economy was growing, there'd be more and more positions for more and more people. And even if some people want to be racist, there'd be too many positions. Even if they want to fill them with whites, there wouldn't be enough whites. So the best way to get complete transformation in the economy is to grow it and to get skills going and to get good education going, because then that would transform the economy far better than the ANC's manipulation of putting their friends and cadres in to steal and pretend that's transformation. That's got nothing to do with transformation.
Mm.
So the DA's plan to grow the economy is the best mechanism for transformation. Let's look at the land. The DA's got the best land reform policies, because what we're saying is the most productive and fertile land, it's not productive, it's fertile, is already in black hands in South Africa. But it's under the control of the chiefs and the headmen. And people don't own their land. And then they can't turn the land into productive entities that build wealth for people. And so we're looking at the millions of hectares that are highly fertile, but that aren't producing any food or jobs. And we're looking where people want ownership to get them ownership of that land. Because it's absolutely disgraceful that almost 30 years into our democracy, many people in rural areas in the most fertile land are completely disenfranchised and not allowed to own the land that they live on and live at the mercy of a person in charge who tells them when and where, when they can be on the land and when they can't be on the land. I mean, looking also at massive urban land reform so people can own their houses and the land that they live on. That is very important and is happening very fast where the DA governs. So we're doing a massive rural land reform program. And all of those are absolutely on the cards with the DA, with our policy. We've got a wonderful economic justice policy. I would like to ask Leonard to take a look at it. It tells us how we will transform the whole of South Africa in line with the Millennium Development Goals and in line with our values. And Kutso?
Yeah, Kutso.
Kutso. He basically said that when we get a mandate, what do we do? Do I interfere or whatever? I get elected to do a job that is defined in the DA's constitution. I follow that job description to the letter. And I do that job. And I don't appoint myself. I don't say, well, I'm going to be the chair of the Federal Council and I'm going to do all of these things. I get elected to that position. And then when I stand for election again, people can vote me out if they want to. We're a democratic organization. But if I get elected, then I follow my mandate absolutely clearly. I stick in my lane. I take leadership from the leaders of the party, from the federal executive, from the federal council, and from the leader of the party. That is what I do. And anybody who's inventing anything else is absolutely thumb-sucking, because I wouldn't be re-elected if I did those things that people say I do.
Helen Zille, I have to say thank you so much, and thank you for staying beyond the hour that we had asked you to stay. Thank you so much for an absolutely insightful conversation. Thank you.
It was a great pleasure, Denzel, and thank you very much.
Thank you. That's Helen Zille, the DA's Federal Council Chairperson.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.